Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sama sambuddhassa. Sabbadukkha nissavana nibbana sacchikavana thaya. Kazawang gahetawa am pabajito amhi. Actually, she said pabachitomhi, which means that we've gone forth, each one of us here, the monks and the novices, even almost say the Anagarikas have half gone forth, for the sake of abandoning all suffering for the realization of Nibbana. And that realization of Nibbana, as you all know, the first is the attainment of stream winning and then getting the different stages of letting go to full enlightenment. It all hinges on that attainment of stream winning, which is the seeing of anatta, non-self, as we chanted in that beautiful sutta of the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. And if you talk about the development of insight, the development of insight is in especially actually to see non-self, anatta. That is a crucial part of the practice of insight. When you see anatta fully, actually, you see just that whether it's a body, whether it's a feeling, whether it's a perception, whether it's a mental formations, whether it's a consciousness, you see fully that each one of these, either together, in part, apart from, contained in these things, that anything of those is not me, not mine, not a self. That is a crucial realization which makes one a stream winner. Stream winner is called dittipanno, one who has got, so arrived at correct view. There's no such thing in Buddhism, you're not supposed to have any views. It says dittipanno, you've got that view. You've got that ditti of non-self. Dittipanno is one of the descriptions of the stream winner. The stream winner is one who has fulfilled samaditti, the right view. Is one who has seen non-self. It's described in the suttas very clearly that a stream winner, or what right view is one who will never see, regard any of the five khandhas, not just the body, but feeling, perception, anything arising in the mind, mental formations, will, or consciousness, anything which knows, will never regard any of that as me, mine, or a self. And that's the Buddha's description. And you can't beat the Buddha's description of what these things are. This is the realization of non-self. And so if we're really here for the end of all suffering, for the realization of Nibbana, if that's what we went forth for, part of that is actually to realize anatta, to get that understanding. More than anything else, the anatta is the key. Sure, we have anicca, dukkha, and even sunyata as well, but they were almost what supports the realization of non-self. It's not just anicca, it's not just dukkha. It's one sees things as anicca, one sees things as dukkha, one sees things as empty for the purpose of realizing the selfless nature, the anatta. Because that, more than anything else, is what propels one to let go even further. As my simile, which I've said before, the only way you can stop grasping. You're trying to stop grasping now, you can't do it. There might be a sound, a song which you hear, which gets into your mind. There might be food which you like to eat. There might be girls you like to look at. Memories you like to tenderly caress from the past. Fantasies which obsess your mind. Why is it we can't let go of these things? Because that's what the mind does when it has the illusion of a self. The simile I gave was like a hand. If you have a hand, it picks up things. That's its nature. You can't stop the hand doing that. You could suppress the hand picking up things for a while, but sooner or later you'll pick up something again. And the mind picks up things. That's what it does. That's the upadana. Upadana literally means taking up. Upa does mean the same as up. Adana, taking. That's what the mind does. If it's got the illusion of a self. It's what a hand does, picks up things. The only way you can stop that is actually to cut off the hand, and it can't pick up anything. That's the only way. The only way to actually to stop the upadana is actually to cut off the illusion of a self. So in this path of the ending of suffering, this is almost like the pivot point. This is actually the door which lets you out of samsara. You don't go out of samsara straight away, but you're on the plane out of suffering. If you can actually get that anatta fully understood. So do you understand what anatta means? Have you fully penetrated it? It does happen that there is some part of samsara, some part of the five khandhas, some part of your six sense bases, some part of something which you still cling to as your essential, primordial self, the essence of you, you know, the unborn you, the one which will always be there, was there at the beginning, which will be there at Nibbana. That illusion there, which is very comforting, of course. We're going into town today to go to the funeral that we passed. We're going through Subiaco, and one of the monks in the back of the car and saw this advertising sign for the body eternal, and said, what a stupid sign that is, just how contradictory it is. Never mentioned at the time, but you might as well say the Vedana eternal. Eternal pleasure, what a contradiction that is. Or eternal perception, whatever that perception is. Or eternal volition or mental formation, or eternal consciousness, it's a contradiction. No such thing exists. But because the people in the world love the idea of body eternal, I think it was a beauty salon or something, I forget what, because they love that idea, it feeds their defilements, it feeds their wishful thinking. That's why it was a very effective advertising slogan for a beauty parlor or something. Now you can understand why, even more so, the idea of an eternal feeling is such a wonderful slogan which takes many people in. And what is that, the eternal feeling of happiness? That's the heaven and hell of the theistic religions. We love to think that, oh, when I die, if I do this, I do that, do the right things, I can go to some realm and I'll be eternally happy forever and ever and ever. And the Buddha actually said he doesn't know of any realm which is eternally happy. No such thing exists. Same with perceptions. Perceptions change. That's one thing which is just so obvious with perceptions. Whatever you perceive, you can only perceive in the sense of a relativity, a difference between things. You can only say white if there's other colours. You can only say black, you know, if there's light. You can only say life if there's death. As perception is limited, it has to change. Otherwise, perception just finishes. And mental formations, how can they ever be still? The whole point of the main mental formation of Sankara, the Buddha said, is Chetana. Chetana is actually what disturbs things. It's will. It's what moves and creates the waves of coming and going in the world. How can that be stable? By its very nature, it moves and causes instability in samsara. And conscious knowing, it's like perception. It's the nature of knowing that if what you know doesn't change, the whole thing disappears. There's a sound, a hum in the background. After a while, you don't know it anymore, because knowing can only know what changes. If it's there all the time, it is not conscious of. It's not conscious anymore. You know that from your own experience. So these senses, change is part of them. So how can you have an eternal sort of sense anywhere? How can you have a khanda which is eternal? How can you have a sense which is eternal? How can you have some sort of heaven realm anywhere, or some sort of form of existence which is always the same, forever and ever? and ever. It's a contradiction in terms, but the reason I brought up that experience today of the body eternal was we love to think that way. It's wishful thinking. It feeds our defilements, and the defilements are so happy that we'd be rather to bend the truth to fit our desires than accept the truth which challenges our very essence. And that's the problem. We're in denial. We have wishful thinking, and it's so hard to break out of that cycle. So we have like this non-self. The reason why we haven't penetrated it is because there's some part somewhere we still haven't seen. The experience of stream-winning is after a deep samadhi experience, usually jhanas, has to be jhanas, you start to realize afterwards what it was that you didn't see. There's a simile I've used before of the blind spot. And this was a simile came from one of my friends in the monastic life, Ajahn Anando, who's now died. Because he was a marine in the Vietnam War. He got shot in the back of the head. He thought he was going to die. He thought he was going to be blind, but he wasn't blind. He could see. However, he had a blind spot. And he told me when he found out that he had a blind spot, because he was playing baseball with his friends. And the pitcher threw the ball at the batsman. The batsman hit it high up into the air in his direction. It was a catch. And he was a very good sportsman, Ajahn Anando, a very fit man, apart from the hole in the back of his head. He had a depression there. It made it very difficult when we shaved his hair. So he only allowed sort of people who knew what they were doing with a razor to shave his hair with a big hole in the back. But when he was following that ball with his eyes, it just disappeared like a psychic phenomena. The ball, he was watching its trajectory, and it just disappeared out of existence. And he couldn't think what was going on. It didn't make sense at all. Balls just don't vanish. And a second or two later, it reappeared again. It was the first time he realized, through inference, through seeing something which shouldn't disappear, actually vanish, he realized what a blind spot was. And a blind spot in your vision, you don't know it's there. The mind fills in what it expects should be there. It's a way of delusion. The mind, the Buddha said, is a magician. It's like a magician's trick. It fills in what you want to be there. What you expect to be is what's presented to your consciousness. Just like some spin doctor serving a prime minister or a president. If you tell the prime minister or president what they don't want to hear, you get sacked. But if you always tell the leader what they want to hear, you get promoted. That's like the mind. The way that things are presented to the knower is just what it wants to see, what it wants to hear, what it wants to feel, what it wants to know. But through that experience of Ajahn Anando, he knew what a blind spot was. And what a great simile that is to the blind spots in our understanding. It shows you what delusion really is, what avidya is at its very heart. How many of you are intelligent? Do you know what's going on? This is actually one of the little tricks I do when I give big talks. Put your hands up if you're above average intelligence. And about 3/4 of people put their hand up. Actually, everybody does. And say that half of you are in denial. Are you above average intelligence? Half of you are in denial. This is what avidya is, delusion is. But it goes much deeper than that. We think we know, but we don't. We can't see that blind spot. We think we know what anatta is. We just chanted that sutta for, I think, the 4th time in this rains retreat. Many of you have chanted that many, many times. You know exactly what it means. Why is it that you're not stream winners? It's something there which you're blind to. There's a hole which has been filled up with delusion, which stops you seeing that there's something wrong in the way that you are cognizing this phenomena we call life. And it's hard to break that. That's why we have to do those jhanas, to see things disappear. It's just like the ball in that simile of Ajahnananda, flying through the air, is supposed to continue on. That continuity of the ball's trajectory was challenged by the experience of seeing it disappear. There's something which is continuous in you, which appears continuous, which you think should be continuous, which is what you take to be yourself. That's where the delusion lies, in the continuity of something. What do you think is always here, always has been here? The underlying, unchanging essence, primordial, always there, always will be. Now you can see in all philosophies, all religions, apart from Buddhism, they always give that some sort of name, Atman, Brahman, or whatever it is you call it. The underlying, the ground of being, or whatever. Now you can see that that's what the Buddha was challenging. That's the blind spot. That's where one has to put the attention to uncover that. Because this is what happens in the jhanas. That ground of being vanishes. What you thought should always be there has gone. What you assumed, you couldn't actually see that this is the essence of what you of your delusion, suddenly vanishes. The whole point of jhanas is to see things disappear, to experience the ending of things which shouldn't end, according to your delusion. And when you see that, that shocks you. It's so profound and so striking, you can't deny that experience which you've just come out of. It's real. In fact, the jhanas are probably more real than waking consciousness. I say that because the places where the mind is very strong, free from hindrances, powerful, alert, aware, super mindful, that's why it's more real. That's one of its experiential descriptions. And in that state, things were missing, which shouldn't be missing. Mentioned that before. It's like looking at the waves on the lake. And that's what most people think is anicca. That's superficial anicca. Rise and fall, rise and fall. When the lake disappears, and the mountains and the bed underneath it, everything which holds that water, which defines it as a lake, all disappears, vanishes, gone. Really gone. Now that really starts to challenge a lot of your assumptions, basic premises of your life. And when they challenge those things, and you accept how far you were wrong before and how true this is, that is called insight. Real insight, the big ones, are what shakes you to the core. What actually shows you something you never saw before. And you realize why you never saw it. You didn't have enough experience and data. You're making assumptions on a limited experience. And this is what most of the world is doing. No experience of life. They just make all these assumptions. Even people, for example, this is a simile, they can't remember their past lives, so they make assumptions they never had one. Because they got limited experience. You get into jhanas, you remember your past lives, and you just how stupid that is. Each person has lived many times. Knowing that, it changes the way you look at life. That's only a simile. Imagine what happens when you realize anatta. That changes you fundamentally. That changes you from the ground of being a puttacchana the ordinary person, into the status of the Aryans. Huge change in the nature of your being, to call it that, in the nature of the process called your five khandhas. But you need to be shocked to be able to see that. It was shocking to Ajahn Anando to see the ball disappear, but that was a small shock compared to what happens when you really penetrate to this anatta business. And you see that what the Buddha was saying in the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, these five khandhas, look at them. You cannot say any of these are a self. You keep focusing on that until you can let go enough, at least out of faith, to allow things to disappear. Why don't things disappear? Because you want them to stay there. Because of your interest, because of your attachment to things. That's why they don't keep being present in your existence. Your family, have they disappeared yet? Why not? Because you keep them in your mind. It's called attachment. Your possessions, why hasn't that disappeared yet? Your past, your future, all these burdens, what's the point of them? Is it your family? It's not your mother, not your father, not your brother, not your sister, not your children. It's not yours. It's people we happen to be with in this lifetime. But they don't belong to you, so stop calling them yours. It's much better to call it the father, or the mother, or the brother, or the sister. So if anyone asks you, have you got any brothers? You said, I haven't got them, but I know the brother, I know the sister. It's closer to Dhamma, because they don't belong to you. If they belong to you, then you have to keep worrying about them and thinking about them. I haven't got any disciples. I've just got the disciples, the monks. If they were mine, I'd be in big trouble, because they keep on increasing. I'm trying to get rid of them. They won't go. So I'm trying very hard this evening to get rid of a lot of you. See, non-self. See, there's nobody in there. There's no doer, there's no knower. Just a process, that's all. But one sees these things start to disappear. It's that anicca when they go. It's that bliss which actually sees that when they go, it's just so wonderful. When they're there, it's such a pain, such a burden. You all know by now how heavy this body is. This has been a range retreat where many of you have been sick. Those of you who haven't been sick have been caring for the sick and getting tired out. Your bodies are a burden. This body is heavy. It's weighty. It's just a burden. It's a pain. It's a thorn. It's an ulcer. So you can imagine what it's like when you get the consciousness where you can't experience your body anymore. And the body is gone together with its senses. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching is a pain. No matter what it is. Seeing your first baby come out of your wife's womb. Seeing the beautiful sunset. Hearing Beethoven's Fifth by the Berlin Philharmonic. What a pain, compared to when everything stops. That's why I've been going around for the last year or two, saying that jhanas is a bliss better than sex, just to really get people going. And that's Dhamma. It's being a bit coarse, but it's Dhamma, because it's showing that when these things disappear, there's a better bliss, a better happiness than falling in love. When you understand that, you understand what we mean by falling in love is suffering. You're not just saying that because you're a monk and you're supposed to say that, but you have all these fantasies about falling in love when I'm not around. That's not what I mean. What I mean is that you know deep in the core of your experience what we mean by all of these excitements of the mind, the movements into the sensory world. That karma loka, the five sense world, in its very essence, is suffering. At its very best, it's a pain. At its worst, it's hell. This is what happens when you get to a jhana. You've got another piece of data to compare this five sense world with. That's why you start to understand what the Four Noble Truths are. Four Noble Truths, all is suffering. Too often you can see, like Western monks even, start to say, no, it's just attachment makes you suffer. Once you get up attachment, there's no suffering anymore. It's just attachment to the five khandhas is suffering. That's not what the Buddha said, and that's not what's true. It's not attachment to these things is suffering. They're suffering in and of themselves, by their nature. To see that, you have to get these jhanas. Once you see that, you understand what we mean. When they cease, it's bliss. When they're there, it's suffering. Because I went to a funeral today. We chanted, as we always chant at funerals, the Anicca chant. Anicca vata sankhara upada vaya dhammino upajita va nirujanti te zang upasamosuko. You all know that chant, all the monks and novices. Even the novices, you probably know that, because it's a very simple chant. It comes from the time of the Buddha himself. The last line is my favourite. First line, just impermanent of all compounded things. Their cessation, their settling, is happiness. Their wupasamo, tezang wupasamo sukho. If you want to know what wupasamo means in the Adhikarana Samatha, they use the same word there, wupasamaya samataya, to settle the business of the Sangha. Which is like doing the Patimokkha, doing the Pawarana ceremony, doing the Katina ceremony. Once it's done, it's settled, it's done, it's finished, it's ended. That's what that word means. So this is what we mean by settling things. Settling the sankharas until they disappear. That last line is saying that when those sankharas settle, that is happiness. Now, what do we mean by that? When the body disappears, when the senses disappears, when the mind becomes so still and all the business goes, that is happiness. Now you understand what dukkha really means. All this coming and going is suffering. All the thinking is suffering. All the moving of the mind is suffering. So will is suffering. Why do you want to do so much? The doing comes from this delusion of being. It's a function of the delusion to do something, to try and assert its existence. You can understand what that's like when you come to a monastery. You can't do what you like anymore. That's suffering. Even this monastery hasn't got a very harsh regime. You're given a lot of freedom. But still, there's many things you just can't do. Maybe you do them. So in the quiet, I remember this nun in the time of my first years in Thailand. She was an American nun. Remember, she told me once that according to the rules of the nuns of Wat Pa Phong, whenever you drink even a glass of water, you should sit down, at least squat down. So she told me once, she got so fed up, she deliberately filled her glass of water and stood up and drank, standing up. She said, that will teach them. All the windows of her hut were closed. No one could see her. But it was a gesture of, not defiance, but a gesture of her ego, herself. Herself was being destroyed in that monastery, as it was supposed to be done. When you have no choice, then the being, the self, tends to wither and fade away. It's the doing which actually strengthens and feeds the illusion of self. That's why, for the last almost 2.5 months, I've been teaching you a way of meditation which not only leads to jhanas, but also which undermines your sense of an identity. Let go of the doer. Stop doing things. Some of you have tried that. Some of you have got great success, just how peaceful it feels. But why can't you do it all the time? The reason is because the delusion of self Because you think you are, you have to do something. You have to move to show that you exist. This is where all the doing comes from. After a while, you do a little less, you get more bliss, it gets more peaceful, you see much more. These doer being undone also undoes the sense of self. The self is literally undone. When that happens, just bliss comes. You're free. The doer is like a prison guard. In these prisons, sometimes the prisoners, because I've been in prisons many times teaching these prisoners or these people who are, have done a crime, teaching them to try and sort of overcome the problems. And you can see that if a prison officer tells one of those inmates to do something, they have to do it. It's like a military, or even more so. They're under the orders of these prison guards, who actually look like military officers with their peaked caps and uniforms. They're told what to do all the time. They have to obey, otherwise they lose their privileges or even get into big trouble. They can understand what a prison is. Whenever that prison guard of will is always telling you what to do. Meditate. Listen. Give up your defilements. Stop doing this. Don't eat so much. Don't talk so much. Meditate a lot. Not sleep a lot. You can understand what it's like. Have you got that prison officer inside of you? That tyrant? I call it the tyrant. Why? Because that makes you feel that you are. Some people wanted in this meditation, in this retreat, they wanted to do things. They wanted to be told what to do. They wanted to be forced to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, to meditate for 2 hours at a stretch, to be forced to, as I eat slowly, everybody in the hall, to be forced after the meal to walk for 2 hours, to be forced to come back and do all the chanting, to be forced to sit up all night. Why? Sometimes monasteries like that become very popular because it doesn't challenge the sense of self. Because they're doing things. And they feel good about doing things. After the range retreat, I've done this range retreat. Look what I did. You measure your sense of self by your doing. The more you do, the more projects you have, the more you exist. When you give up your projects, when you give up your doing, when you give up your controlling, you start to disappear. That's what we mean by Tezang Upasamo Sukho. You settle all of those sankharas. As you settle more and more, it becomes happy. It becomes peaceful. It becomes blissful. Until you settle the body and the five senses and the doer so much, you get yourselves into a jhana. You don't get into a jhana by doing it. That just makes more self. Jhanas are stages of letting go, not just of doing, but letting go of much of what you take yourself to be. That which is continuous stops in jhana. That which has been here since the time you were born and much before, which is always there when you wake up, which is with you for the whole day, which is there when you go to sleep, which is even there in your dreams, that stops in jhanas. It's not there anymore. It's that which is, that's what you've got to see. That is your blind spot. Once you see that, understand that, you know what you took to be yourself for all these years. What was your blind spot? What was your awija? When that's seen, then you understand what it means by being a stream winner. You could actually claim it to your teacher and friends. You've seen. You've seen your delusion. And you can actually understand where all this beautiful path of Buddhism originated from, its great importance. You are now an Aryan. You are different because you've seen deeply. As part of that seeing, you know it's part of the realization. You know that once that seen, that which continuous has been seen is just the illusion. There's nothing continuous there at all. It's empty of continuity, empty of an essence, empty of a ground of being. Nothing left. You know that this causal sequence called the five khandhas, you know that it's mortally wounded. What's kept it going for so long has been undermined. Mara, the deluder, has been seen. And you know it's only a matter of time. You know it's not up to you. You've seen there's no one in there. You see it's a process. There's a causal sequence there. And you've seen that. Once you've seen that causal sequence in its completeness, you know what happens. You don't need to read the future. You can see just as you know when you throw something up, it comes down. You know that this five candle sequence is not going to last that much longer. You understand that birth will soon be destroyed. There will be no more of this for you. At stream winner, you know that at most seven lifetimes. At non-returner, you know just the next Sudawasa and that's it. An arahat, you know just the end of this life. These are knowledges which are very clear. And they come from the realization of what's happening, the clear seeing. But it's fundamentally coming from seeing non-self. That's why the things like the Satipatthana Sutta, you can read that and see that its function, the reason it's there. Actually, there's two reasons the Satipatthana practice is there. First of all, it's to get you into jhana. There's the Satipatthana, which is pre-jhana. Seeing enough of the non-self, of the body and feelings and the mind or consciousness and the mental formations or the mental objects. See enough of that. Enough to let go of the doer, the controller. When you see there's enough, there's nothing to control anymore. These are just things which arise and pass away. When you see that enough, you have the strength of letting go, to be able to abandon all this controlling, all this attachment to the world of the five senses, to listening, to feeling. So that when limiters come up, you don't have fear. What are you afraid of anyway when bliss comes up? You're afraid of losing your body and your senses. It's fascinating when I teach like this. I was just teaching in Sentosa in Singapore, the first part of this rains retreat on a Sataha. And this person came up to me in their interview and said they got frightened because they were sitting there, their hands disappeared. It was quite cute, really. The first time that somebody disappeared, they couldn't feel their hands. And of course, that's just a very preliminary bit of kaya prasadi, tranquility of the body. But it's the first time it ever happened to them. And so they weren't quite used to having a part of the body they couldn't feel anymore. Fear comes up because they were literally attached to their hands. They'd always been there, and now they disappeared. And fear came up. Now, of course, you can imagine when your whole body disappears, sometimes people get very afraid. When their will disappears, they get terrified. Remember, as a kid growing up in a Christian society, you know, the worst, the most scariest of things was this Christian devil who was come to take over your mind. Stupid thing, if they want to come, you can have it. Take it over. There's nothing in there to control. That's how you know Mara. And no sort of devil or demon like that can bother you at all. What have you got to lose? All fear comes from attachment. Thinking you're going to lose something which is important and essential to you. That's what fear is. So why is it that people get this fear in meditation which stops you going deeper? Why is it that we start to think or fantasize or dream? Because we're afraid of letting go. We're afraid of disappearing, ourself no longer being there. Please understand how much the self and the doer are connected. To be is to do is to be. Once you understand that, you understand why I teach in this way, to let go of the doer. So you're not reaffirming and strengthening this illusion of self to the point where you just let go so much that nimittas come, you can stay with those nimittas. You don't have to do anything. You don't want to do anything. There is no movement of the mind because you're selfless enough to let go. So the first part of Satipatthana is to bring you to enough selflessness, enough understanding, enough trust, even enough experience of restlessness, of selflessness, to stop doing things, to stop controlling, to be able to let go. When you've cut off most of the hand, there's not much picking up. First part of the Satipatthana is to cut off a lot of the fingers. So you don't pick up things. You don't have craving for the coarse things in the world, like sex or food or movies or whatever. Those things are cut off. So you don't pick up things. You don't even pick up your thoughts. Why is it that people can't stop thinking in their meditation or in their life? Because you want to think. It gives you the sense of being when you're thinking about something. Sometimes people fantasize. They want to be a rock star in their next life. Or they want to be the best meditator in the whole of the world. They want to be a saint and a star. What is that? That's just, you can see that's just trying to embellish the self again. They want to be the best meditator in Bodhinyana for the Range Retreat of 2004. Next week I'll give the prize for the monk, the novice, the four categories of prize. The best monk meditator this year is. Stupid thing, isn't it? That just embellishes the sense of self. At the talking about medals, I got one a couple of weeks ago. But I said at that ceremony, it seems the more you let go of the self, the little of what's left is more honoured. Strange thing. The more selfless you are, the more it's respected. The more you give up, the more happiness you have. So after a while, we let go of the doer to undermine the self. As the sense of self is undermined, the doing gets less and less. We get closer to anatta, we get closer to peace. As the doer disappears, there's nothing to do anything anymore. The cause, the thing which actually moves the mind, starts to wither and fade away. And of course it gets easier to get those deep states of mind. There's a Satipatthana, pre-jhana, it's just to do that. And once those jhanas are achieved, then you start to look, this body, it's just a body, that's all. It's not me, not mine, the soul, because it's disappeared in those jhanas. There's no body there at all. Feeling, Vedana, you've seen so many Vedanas, all the five sense Vedanas disappear. And perceptions, you see one perception go, another one arise. That's Potapada Sutta. Was it doing? The doing stopped in second jhana, mostly stopped in first jhana. You see the mind, citta, or the five, six types of vijnana. You see that just the mind sense is the only one left in the jhanas, and if you go through a couple of jhanas, you see that start to fade away. The mind starts to disappear. That's the reason why you go from one jhana to another, just start to see things going, vanishing, fading away. The knower going away. There's many levels to a knower. It's not just a knower. The knower in ordinary life is just so coarse. The knower in first jhana is hugely refined. The knower in second jhana, it's half the knower of first jhana has been cut off and disappeared. It's a different type of knowing. Third jhana, another type of knowing. Which is a real knowing? Which is a real you? Of course, it doesn't take a rocket scientist, if you experience those jhanas, to realize none of them is you. This is where you see that consciousness, mind consciousness, one of the great places where people have the illusion of a self. The experience of the jhanas themselves invalidates your delusion. You're shocked to understand that something you thought was continuous, an essence, has stopped and disappeared. No longer will you take that to be a self. You see where you made your mistake. You understand that that delusion was with you at birth, was with you in your past lives. You understand why you keep getting reborn. Because you want to. You have to keep picking up things. The hand hasn't been cut off yet. Just because this body dies, the mind will still be picking things up. It's the illusion of the self hasn't died. That's why rebirth happens. When there's avijja, there will be sankhara, and sankhara will give rise to the rebirth consciousness, basic dependent origination. When the avijja is fully overcome, avijjatveva seta viraga nirodha, it's ceased without any remainder. That's when paticca-samuppada starts to unravel. That's when the process of rebirth starts to unwind. And after the jhanas, as one sees, all that which was the cause of rebirth, the illusion of self, the hand has been cut off now, you don't grasp anymore. There can't be a rebirth. Until that time, you are subject to rebirth. You know that you will come back here again, or to some realm again, thinking that this time you'll get it right. This time, if you just get enough wisdom behind your willpower, you can achieve whatever you want. You can become rich beyond your wildest dreams. You can have the soul partner, the one which was meant for you in heaven, and you live happily ever after. You'll find this elixir of non-death, of eternal youth of life. You'll get the body eternal and the mind of happiness forever and ever and ever. You see the stupidity of all of that. You see that not because you're negative, because that's the truth of things. That's your experience in deep, deep meditation, when the five hindrances which distort reality are completely abolished, and that's the realest, most truthful experience you can have. That is Dhamma. That's what the Buddha saw. So your job, if you really want to end suffering, if you want to end rebirth, if you want to put an end to samsara, which I hope you do, because samsara sucks. Said that before in a talk. If you don't believe that, just go and ask those monks in hospital. Go and stay. Go and visit Satyamantra in hospital. Just go and listen with me on the phone to people talking about their problems. Just be real about this world, this life. Be rational. How can there be happiness here? How can you find the best monastery, a place where you'd be happy ever after? Every monastery in Australia, Thailand, Sri Lanka is imperfect, painful, subject to suffering. So are you. So get out of this samsara as soon as you can. What is your blind spot? Get the jhanas and you'll see. after the jhana, something there. You see your mistake. You have the data. Old simile of the tadpole in the water. You just can't know what water is because you're born in there. You live there all the time. How the heck can you know what wetness is? You've got to get out of the lake to know what water is. So what you do in jhanas, you get out of the five sense realm. Then you know what the five sense realm is. So someone asked me to just sensory pleasures, when it says that in the suttas, what does it mean? Does it mean the realm of the five senses? I said, yeah, that's what it means. But you have to get to jhanas to know exactly what that means. What disappears, what's not there when you experience the first jhana, is the five sense realm. Only when you get out of it do you know what that thing is. If you're in that five sense realm, it's like the tadpole in the water. You might have some sort of idea about it, but you just don't know it. You can't know it. It's impossible to know the five sense realm if you're always there, inside of it. It's always around you. All you really understand is just the vibrations, just the various permutations of the five sense realm. But you don't really know what it is until you leave it. That's why the importance of the jhana is to get out and see what it's like. And then you understand why the five sense realm is dukkha. You understand why people are monks. Why they do jhanas. Well, the point of it all is, we've often said, all the people who say jhanas aren't possible, sorry, all the people who say that jhanas aren't necessary for enlightenment are people who've never experienced jhanas. Not the real ones. There's all sorts of fake jhanas going around, but the real jhanas, once you've experienced it, you understand why they are essential. Then you can see what it's like to be out of the water. You understand what water is. You understand what's stopped, what's not there. Something which was always there, the continuity of your experience of the five senses in this particular aspect, is no longer there. That shocks you because it's something you've never experienced since you were born, probably in previous lives as well. You never experienced this. Ever. That's why it's weird. That's why it shocks. That's why it's potent enough to change the way you look at the world forever. That's why it's possible to get stream winning. And then you're on the path out of samsara. So much rubbish is talked about Buddhism by people who haven't had experience. It's important that you here get those experiences. Enough to really penetrate, not just for your own sake, but to help other sentient beings as well. So they too can actually be inspired by you, led by you, encouraged by you, to get out of the lake as well. It's like a person who's in prison, born in prison, and someone escapes. Say, hey, there's a world outside of prison. And they think, yeah, we don't believe you, you're just conceited. You think you know better than everybody else. Say, look, there's a world outside prison. You don't have to be in this realm of the five senses. You don't have to be in samsara. Get out. And they think you're weird. That you don't delight in the beautiful prison of babies and families and just becoming rich and going travelling and doing all this and doing all that. Because you don't delight in those things. It's important. It shows that you know something more. Most people won't believe you. Doesn't matter. You just say your piece. They believe you, don't believe you. That's their problem, not yours. But if you get out, you can tell other people what it's like. Tell other people just what suffering or what happiness is. What the Aryas, the noble ones, say is happiness. The ordinary people say is suffering. What the ordinary people say is suffering, the Aryans say is happiness. Sorry, well, all the people say is happiness, the Aryans say is suffering. Completely the wrong way around. That's what delusion is. So you get out by getting into a jhana. Let go of the self as much as you possibly can. Do anatta sanya, practices Satipatthana, be mindful, keep your rules, meditate as much as you can, let go of the doer as much as you can to weaken the sense of self, until there's enough selflessness there that you get into the jhanas, and then you really kick shit out of the self. You kick it to death, using a coarse expression. It's all gone. Once you see non-self, continuity stopped. That which was always there, it's gone. There's no water anymore. There's no prison anymore. This is different. It's enough to show you that life isn't prison. That you aren't what you thought you were. Selflessness, anatta, has been seen experientially. You're on the way out. That's what anatta means. That's how it happens. That's how I hope that each one of you will experience some time in your monastic life. That's the talk, A1.
Sati Pano Bhagavata.